Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Today's guest is Linda Reedman, who dishes with me about sociology, second grade, and stretching. Linda grew up on the New Jersey shore, where she raised a family and is now venturing into entrepreneurship. She's also spent many years learning how to change her relationship with food from eating for emotions to eating for health and nourishment. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Linda Reedman, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are things going in your neck of the woods?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. Yeah, things are going great. Quiet little town down here in South Jersey, and got home from work and just having a good day so far.
Having a good day indeed. And the funny thing is, I usually am not located where I'm located. So your neck of the woods is right around the corner from my neck of the woods today, as I'm also in South Jersey.
That's awesome.
Little known facts about both of us that we'll share. We have a lot of things in common. So let's talk a little bit about that, because as I usually start off my podcast episodes, I always give like an origin story and a history of how I know my guests, or I tell them to share with us our first time that we've met. But you and I have physically never met. And we were just talking about maybe just knowing each other via social media. And that's about it.
Yeah, that's correct. We have not physically met. But now that I know you have a little, inn down here in South Jersey, we'll have to schedule something to meet in person.
I would love that.
I would love that.
Yes. Because enough is enough with the virtual platform. Let's start hanging out in 3D world. So let's talk then about your original story. Tell us a little bit about some of your earliest food memories. A lot of what we discuss in this podcast has to do with our childhood eating behaviors and how that positively or negatively affected or influenced our current behaviors. So walk me through a little bit about maybe where you grew up or some of the earliest things that you remember as a child when it comes to food.
Oof, wow. Yeah. I grew up down here in Barnegat. My parents, moved from North Jersey and bought the house down here. So I grew up on a lagoon property, beautiful little house. My father worked full time. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And she would, pack our school lunches. And my earliest food memories, honestly, are from that early childhood going to preschool. She would pack things like peanut butter and jelly or bologna and cheese sandwich. There was always chips, always cookies. There was always a little snack with my sandwich. Breakfast would be typically cereal or toast and some fruit. We would do pancakes on the weekends. My father loved to get out the pancakes and do some scrambled eggs. So we would do that. And my mother also liked to make soft boiled eggs, which now that I think back on eating those, kind of gross. I'm not sure how I survived that. So, and then dinners would typically be, I grew up on the standard American diet, right? That sad diet. So I grew up on hot dogs and beans and TV dinners and chicken and potatoes and a lot of meat and vegetables. My father was very, meat and potatoes kind of guy. So as I was growing up, and I have one sister, so it was my sister and I. So as I was growing up, food was very much coming from a box, a bag, a package, all processed foods. And the things that were homemade, again, were still, frozen vegetables or canned vegetables, nothing really fresh and really made from scratch. My mother would throw some chicken in the oven, things like that. So I grew up on all of that kind of food. And a few years into my elementary school years, I would say we discovered that my dad had, some heart disease. He had high blood pressure, high cholesterol. He was on medications for those things. And my mother would have to start cooking things very bland, no salt, no flavor or something. I'm not even sure how I survived eating as a child. So everything was either, baked or grilled, or it was just, kind of bland. Chicken would be really dry. There were never any sauces, nothing fun. It's really, just very, very bland growing up a little bit. And that's just kind of how food was.
I think when it comes to things like that, when people do recognize, okay, there's a disease state or a condition that I have to manage, it does feel like it's all or nothing. So everything gets cut out, and people don't sometimes, well, you know, no fault of their own. They're probably not told how they can manage their new diet and still be able to enjoy life, because even though you were finding the chicken dry and bland food, I'm assuming your dad probably was hating it too, maybe as well. And I mean, if anybody knows anything about cooking and eating, you know, salt and fat and sugar is what brings the mouthfeel. That's what makes it palatable. So to deny yourself of all those things and not necessarily know how to substitute better quality foods or how to, you know, minimize some things, but maybe use other alternatives to flavor the foods. That's an unfortunate state of affairs. So I'm sorry that you had to go through all of that. You literally went from very highly processed, flavorful foods to wah, wah.
Yeah, not much of a little bit.
And so tell me too about some of the other things that you might have enjoyed. Like, did you have holidays at your house growing up? Were there very large family affairs? Who did the cooking when there was an event going on?
So holidays were usually spent with my grandparents. We would travel back up north to go see either my mom's parents or my dad's parents, you know, whoever was hosting that year. And grandma would do the cooking. So when grandma did the cooking, that was very different, you know, traditional holiday foods, you know, the turkey at Thanksgiving, the mashed potatoes, the sweet potatoes, the green bean casserole with the cream of mushroom soup, I think they put in that with the crunchy onions on top.
Right.
It was all those traditional holiday foods, but grandma would typically do the cooking, you know, and no one was ever allowed to leave the table. You know, when I was growing up, you had to finish your meal before you could leave the table. So that there were rules surrounding the food too, you know. And then my mother always also, we always said grace before we ate. So there was always a, you know, let's be thankful for what's in front of us. And, you know, I grew up going to church and things like that. So there was always that aspect to everything too. And even at the holidays, it was, let's say grace before we dive into the food.
Well, you are one of many guests, including myself as the host. We are all members of what is known as the Clean Plate Club. So we were not allowed to leave the table until things were finished because children were starving all over the world. And it was our responsibility as 6 and 11-year-olds to make sure that we didn't waste our food. So yeah. This is really the beginning of the relationships that children have when they're forced at a table to make sure that they eat everything, or in the sense of maybe etiquette like that, I can kind of understand too, where, you know, hey, let's not eat and then bolt to go play with our friends. Like, make sure we are all respectful of us having a family gathering. But in your case, was it, you know, make sure your plate was clean or not eat, not leave because it's rude to walk away from the table?
It was a little bit of both. You know, we didn't answer the phone if it rang, the TV wasn't on, there were no distractions. It was Dad got home from work and we all sat down and we had dinner together and nobody left the table until plates were clean and, you know, there were no distractions. It was, those are my memories of growing up.
Yeah. And so that's the thing too, that I think I miss a little bit from back in the day. Also, we also waited to eat as a family. We had social gatherings on a variety of different occasions. Like Friday nights were always like club night, card playing nights, where my family would have friends or cousins and relatives come over and the kids would do their own thing. So I felt like there was a lot more socializing and gathering and making sure that you had quality time, where, you know, flash forward now, I mean, some of us are, or at least a few years ago when we had no choice but to be locked down, that we were put in that situation again. Maybe that wasn't the greatest situation, depending on who you're growing up and living with. But I really enjoy being able to sit at a table and eat and have, like, this is meal time here. So just to jump ahead for a second, tell us a little bit about how any of those routines or behaviors then formed who you are now when it comes to food and your own family.
Yeah, so I have two boys. They're 19 and 17 now. The way I grew up and the way my ex-husband grew up, you know, was about those family dinners. So I wanted to continue those traditions and make sure we had holidays together with family. Family was very important to me. So as the boys were growing up, when they were little, it was, I made dinner, we sat down. But what I found was that my children's palates were very different from each other and from ours. And I started to learn how to cook different things that had a little more flavor than the things I grew up on. I started to experiment a little bit more with food, finding recipes, finding healthy things. My ex-husband also had some health issues, and he decided to go vegan at one point. So I was really diving into learning how to cook those vegan meals, but the boys still wanted meat. So there was a lot of, I found myself cooking more than one meal to satisfy everybody, which was insane. You know, I was constantly in the kitchen, and I was blessed to be a stay-at-home mom. I was able to stay home with my boys for about 15 years. And so it was great because I was able to, you know, cook those meals and put breakfast on the table for them and pack their lunches and get them off to school, come home, have family dinners. But as the boys started to get involved in sports, which was one thing that my sister and I were not real involved in, a lot of extracurricular activities as kids. So there was never a lot of running around from, you know, got to drop you off at this practice and that practice and grab a slice of pizza or McDonald's on the way. There was more of that as I was raising my boys, because boys are very different. And I, you know, found myself, okay, they want to do baseball, they want to do soccer, let's try karate. They were involved in a lot of different sports. So sometimes practices would fall into that dinner time, so to speak. And growing up, there was definitely a dinner time. It was, you know, 7 o'clock was breakfast, or 8 o'clock was breakfast, and then it was 12 o'clock is lunch, 6 o'clock is dinner. End of story, you know. And raising my boys, I found that timing of meals had to be very different to fit the schedules in with their sports.
Right. So there was a lot of adjustments in that sense. So not only did you have two children whose flavor palates were a little bit different, and you were also trying to accommodate your ex-husband's dietary needs as well. And then you also take it into account, not just the extracurricular activities as far as within your schedule, but is it fair to assume, especially since this is a stage of life where children are growing, that depending on what they were doing, you know, this is expending a lot of energy. You might have to give them twice as much food or adjust their diet in some way to make sure that they're eating in relationship to maybe whatever their sports needs were. Did you see any of that come into your way that you were creating the meals for your children?
Oh, absolutely. As they got a little bit older and the demands of the sport were, you know, changing, you know, as t-ball players, not necessarily so, but they got real involved in karate and jujitsu. And as they were involved in that, their dietary needs had to change. They needed some kind of, you know, carbohydrate snack to keep themselves going throughout that practice, because jiu-jitsu practice could be, you know, an hour, sometimes a little bit more, just dependent if they were training for, you know, a competition, things like that. So we would have snacks before we left, and then they would get home and it was, you know, raid the refrigerator. What was for dinner? Let's heat up whatever I made. Or if there was something in the crock pot, just, you know, they would dive into food as soon as they got home.
Right. And that's something too. So then you have the ability to be home for them and work around their schedule. But then did that change any of your own personal needs when it came to either the quality, the quantity, or the timing of foods? Like, did you feel comfortable with having to adjust this? Or did you end up being like, listen, I'm going to eat when they eat, obviously, but I'm getting really hungry, or I'm at this point where I'm full and I don't want to eat anything. How did that affect your own personal dietary needs and habits?
Sure. I would eat when they ate. I found myself a lot of times on the go too. It was, we're running late for practice, so let's run into Wawa and grab something real quick. And Wawa's like a convenience store down here. So there were, you know, times where you're running late and you just have to grab something on the go. And that's when I found myself picking up things that were a little more processed and not as healthy. So, and I found myself at during, you know, while they were growing up, I found myself doing a little more emotionally eating. You know, my marriage was not the best. My father had passed away. There were a lot of emotional things that happened as I was, you know, in that marriage and raising my boys. So there would be times where, you know, I would be just so stressed out from schedules and homework and, you know, helping the boys with this, that, or the other thing, or trying to keep up with the cleaning of the house. And, you know, then we adopted a dog and I had the dog on top of everything else. And there was a lot of things to manage. So I would go to the refrigerator, or I would, you know, run out and grab a candy bar, or found myself just stuffing my face with food to soothe whatever was going on in that stress, in those stressful moments.
Yeah. I mean, there is a reason why it's called comfort food. And this comes up a lot in the world in which I work. So I'm a registered dietitian. My primary source of clients come from usually my, where I'm teaching school. So I work with students, but they are a variety of different ages and they have stressors, right? So you're going to school full time, you're maybe working, you're taking care of, we have a variety of ages as well. So I think our median age is about 27 years old. So it's not like fresh out of high school and right into college. So they might have their own kids, or they might also be caregiving for an older parent. And so there's so much going on, but honestly, every human is probably dealing with something. And so I want to talk a little bit more about this, because this also leads us in the direction of how you started pursuing your current career. When it comes to emotional eating in the world of dietetics, we are usually trained on the more clinical side of things. Like, how do I keep somebody alive if they're in a hospital? So we work with, you know, calorie formulas and medical nutrition therapy to help support and manage a particular disease state. And we have a lot of input into the intake of things, but we don't have a lot of behavioral skills or knowledge. No offense to our curriculum. It's just how it is. We usually get one semester of counseling and that's it. But so much, it's never about the food. So much is about the behavioral part of it. So can you talk us through a little bit, if you don't mind, you know, going a little bit deeper and personal, your story of how you started coming into processing those feelings and being able to heal from whatever it was that was triggering those cues to soothe yourself with food? And where did that shift happen? Like, was it something that you noticed, or did somebody outside, an external factor happen? Share with us a little bit your story, because I'm sure there are going to be a ton of people who can totally relate to what you're about to say.
Yeah, absolutely. When I got married, I went back to college. I graduated with a sociology degree. So I loved sociology, absolutely loved it. But no one ever told me what I could do with that degree. So then I met my husband and we got married and we moved down to this area from North Jersey. I ended up with a waitressing job just to kind of get us through, you know, while we settled in to things here. And then I decided to go back to school. I really wanted to be a teacher. So I went back to school, got my teaching certificate. I ended up teaching second grade for a few years. And then I ended up pregnant with my first child. So when my son was born, we decided that it would be best if I could stay home. I had a lot of anxiety, some mild postpartum depression with him, mm-hmm. which was really tough for me. And food, I actually didn't eat very well at that point. I was trying to breastfeed. It wasn't working out for me. The baby was crying. I'm a brand new mom. I'm completely stressed out. So I ended up leaving my teaching career to stay home. And we had just bought a brand new house. So there was all the stress of, okay, how are we going to make the mortgage? How are we going to make the bills? We have a brand new baby to, you know, feed. And we ended up financially working all of that out. And then fast forward, you know, 15 years, I was ready to go back to work. You know, the boys are older, they're getting through middle school and high school. And I decided that I wanted to possibly go back to teaching. So I ended up in the classroom as an instructional aide, and I kept applying for these positions that were opening up, but the door kept closing. And for me, I'm a very spiritual and, you know, faithful person. And I realized that, you know, God was just shutting those doors. I was not meant to go back to teaching.
Right.
Went back to waitressing. I was cleaning houses, doing some things just to, you know, make some ends meet. And my aunt actually told me about Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I started to get really turned on by some of the people in the food industry. And so I looked into Institute for Integrative Nutrition, went ahead and enrolled, and I fell in love with that program. I was like, this is it. I want to be a health coach. This is where I need to be. So fast forward through the year of going through the program, graduated, came up with my health coaching business name, registered the business, had a few clients, was doing okay. And then I found myself in the middle of a divorce. And that put a screeching halt on things for me because I was desperate to leave.
Yeah.
So I ended up back in the restaurant industry just so I had a paycheck so I could prove that I could afford the apartment that I currently live in. And so there was a lot of emotion coming into play there for me. And the restaurant industry was tough. It was stressful to be in, but it was a means to an end, so to speak. And then I found myself talking with my chiropractor, and I ended up, I currently work for Stretch Zone. It put me back in a health and wellness setting. Gave me an opportunity to really run a business. I'm the manager over there right now, and gave me a lot of opportunity to work in a health and wellness setting. And over the course of the last 8 months, I really began to feel that tug back toward health coaching. You know, I've met a lot of clients in the Stretch Zone setting that, you know, like we just said before, there's so many factors that go into your health and wellness. It's not just about the food. It's not just about you need to exercise. It's not just about you need a good stretch. There's so many things that come into play. And I went back to that health coaching mindset, and I decided that this is really where I want to be. But I want to help women focus on that emotional aspect of eating, because I have been there, done that, and occasionally still do that. You know, when I get stressed out, I have to ask myself, am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Am I stressed? Am I angry? I have to ask myself these questions. So I've come to this point in my life where I have to really be mindful. And I love that because it allows me the space to just say, okay, I really don't need a bag of M&Ms right now. I might want them, but that's not going to solve my problem at the moment. So let's take a deep breath, take a step back, and how can I solve this without diving into bad food?
So you bring up a lot of good points here. The first thing with mindfulness, that comes up a lot in some of my discussions. And when I think of mindfulness, I think of slowing down and paying attention and focusing. And I also realize that so many people in my world, myself included, people with whom I work, they just don't want to slow down and do anything on that level. And it really requires us to reflect and pay attention. And sometimes paying attention means slowing down, but we're all on the go, very, very busy and important. I don't have time for any of these things. There is no other way to be successful in prioritizing your health unless you do slow down and try to pay attention to what's happening, to be aware of those habits that you're making, the things that you might need to improve upon, either by bringing new habits in, letting go of things that no longer serve you, and or keeping consistent, because consistency is something that comes up a lot when I have these discussions, not only in the podcast, but in my own world too, right? Consistency is key, like making this a habit, something that you do all the time, having what we call a non-negotiable. So these go-to things that require us to live and be human, sometimes we sacrifice because we have other responsibilities or a packed schedule, or I just can't fit everything in the day. And so I want, if you don't mind, talk us through a little bit about what that mindfulness, what that mindset is, because you're not necessarily denying yourself. Like, if you want a cookie, you'll have a cookie, but you know better for your own life that you're not going to be elbow deep in a bag of M&Ms, like you were saying. Like, that's not solving the problem. That's not satisfying the craving or the indulgence factor of treating yourself to something that is a substitution for, let me process these emotions. So what do you go through, or how do you process that? Like, do you have an actual little checklist that you go through? How do you even recognize when a trigger moment is going to happen?
So recognizing triggers has become more and more prevalent for me lately. I used to kind of just blindly walk through those triggers. Now I have become so much more mindful about where I'm at when an emotion is triggering me, and I can go backwards, right? So I can think back, okay, this is triggering me because this happened to me, even if it was 25 years ago, this happened to me then. I can recognize that this is the same emotion coming up with the same type of person, and or the same type of event, whatever it might be. I can recognize those triggers now. So I have to just stop in my, sometimes I just stop in my tracks and I just take a deep breath and I grab a sip of water and I go, okay, what's happening right now? Where am I at? What do I need? Am I really hungry? Do I really want this sweet thing? Or what am I missing in my life that I feel like I need to have something sweet? So for me, I had to really dig deep and pick apart where is the sweetness missing for me? And so a lot of that came from the things in my marriage. You know, it was a very rocky 25 years for me. There was some mental and verbal abuse in that marriage. So there wasn't a whole lot of sweetness in our marriage. So I gravitated towards that sugar. So for me, I make the connection, and for clients, I try to make that connection. Like, okay, you're craving something sweet. What else is missing? What might be missing in your life that's not feeling so sweet right now? Or, you know, if we're craving, I don't know, that comfort food, where do you need the comfort? Do you need a hug instead of a big bowl of macaroni and cheese? Like, what do you need? So I try to, for myself and for a client, I would absolutely like try to dig a little bit deeper and make a connection to the emotion that's coming with the food.
That is amazing. Sense. It absolutely does. And as a matter of fact, I said before about the comfort, and you just said the sweetness, and I don't think I've ever heard it stated like that before. Like, there's sweetness missing from my life, and I'm trying to comfort myself with something that feels sweet or that provides me with flavor, however that means, you know, maybe that's emotional or mental support in some sense. That's so interesting that you just termed it like that, because I think that just brought up an aha moment for me with a lot of my own my own issues. So that too, though, Linda, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that too can be something that really takes time to chip away at, because it's one thing just, oh, I'm acknowledging I have an issue. And then it's a whole other thing to get in front of that, like to understand what I call the thing before the thing.
Absolutely.
So that too can take time. So, you know, again, I think we live in a society, a world, I don't think it'll ever not be the case, but I think we just live in a society that just, we want immediate gratification. We have the luxury and the ability to have everything at our fingertips. So why wouldn't we want to see if we can be healthy within, you know, a weekend of like a juice fast or something? Like, that's just not going to be there. We really have to make sure that we're implementing and getting at that root cause of stuff. And that can take time. That could be, again, chipping away at trauma, chipping away at our own personal words and language that we use in ourselves and to others. This is also a conversation that comes up too, that, you know, if you as an individual, not just you, Linda, but anybody who's listening to this, you know, if you as an individual are treating yourself in a certain way and or comforting yourself or taking something out on, you know, in your own world, then are people around you noticing that? So especially when it comes to children in your life who are, you're modeling behaviors for them, are they then also going to take that in and understand, oh, when I do this, then I'm a bad person. And when I eat this, I'm a good person. So, you know, we really have to be mindful of who else is picking up on these cues and these behaviors. And that's not to say that we should shove ourselves in a closet and just, you know, process our feelings there, but really find an outlet. So you mentioned, you know, physical activity is a big thing for you. Do you do anything like journaling? You mentioned you were religious as well. Does that all play a role in strategizing outside of the food? What other ways you can process these emotions and these, you know, frustrating situations that you might come across nowadays?
Absolutely. 100%. Sometimes, you know, just even if it's just to slow down, you know, my days can be very busy. Like we were just talking about, you know, they're packed in and everything's busy. So sometimes just to slow down, it's, let me just do a bedtime yoga, and I'll get on YouTube and I'll find a little yoga routine that I can do just before bed, just to get that calmness and to just, you know, settle in for the evening. Sometimes when I wake up in the morning, you know, I need a good brisk walk. I'll go to the beach. The beach is my go-to. I love the peace and the serenity that comes from sitting near the ocean and just listening to the waves. So I will sit and meditate, maybe do a little yoga on the beach. I'll take a walk on the beach. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, a sprint or a marathon or a jog on the beach. It's just a walk along the ocean, picking up shells, really just being mindful of my environment and trying not to think about all the what ifs of the, you know, what is the day going to bring, things right. like that, just to kind of center myself. And prayer was huge for me. I grew up in a Catholic home. My mother, you know, would drag us by the ponytails out of bed in the morning and, you know, head to church. And over the years, my spirituality and my religion has changed. I grew up Roman Catholic. I found myself raising the boys in an Episcopal church because that was very similar to Roman Catholic. And now most recently I have joined it's a Christian Bible church out on Long Beach Island. Mm-hmm. So it's right there by the beach, which is amazing for me. And I love the service there because it's so Bible-based and everything is just about prayer and centering things around Christ. And that's who I am at my core. That is, you know, I try very, very hard to follow that. And just now I do things in my life. Okay. Well, like what would Jesus do? And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but really what would he do?
Yeah.
Certain situations. Well,
because and so you're allowing that, process to not be so internal. You're mm-hmm. allowing it to be outward as well. And to know that you have support in the way that your faith will help support you.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. For me, it's very, very much so turning to the Bible, turning to those readings and turning to prayer. And there have been days, Dina, when I tell you, I have sat in my car and I have looked up at the heavens and said, okay, God, now what? What do you want from me today? You know, but I would rather sit in my car and have that conversation with God then dive into Wendy's and go grab a cheeseburger because I just don't know what direction I'm headed. It's that those mindful moments of, okay, what do I need? And sometimes it's just not the right time of day for me to call a girlfriend or, you know, do some of those other things that are my go-tos. I will just sit and pray about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too, with understanding that the universe's space is much larger than ourselves, and allowing ourselves to either listen or speak, right? Or do both in that sense. Like you should always hopefully reach out for support. I mean, I'm a huge mental health advocate and I always discuss, you know, the stigma around mental health issues. And I always try to make sure I'm very transparent with letting people know I've suffered from a lot of unfortunate thoughts and a lot of different situations that I've been in. But I am so grateful that I've never internalized to the point where I would self-harm, because I know that I have outlets. So whether it is spiritual guidance, whether it's a true, you know, support group in an organization or a facility, whether it's calling a helpline, you know, I really think that's important for us to recognize that we're just human and we shouldn't keep the burden of so many things. And even if you're at your most detrimental, lowest stage, whatever, like, I hope you realize that there's probably somebody out there going through the same situation. There's probably some sort of facility, organization, service, program that's there waiting for you to ask for help, and that you're not necessarily having to just say I'm lost and I'm staying lost. Like I really think it takes a little bit of an effort to try to say, let me try to get out of this, of course. And those of us who, you know, are a little bit more stubborn or set in our ways, I'm not sure in your family or not, Linda, but in my family, we were like, don't talk about anything. Nobody air their dirt or laundry ever. And don't tell anybody about anything ever. And I was like, why? Like, that just made no sense to me. I wanted to feel like people could share and vent and support each other. But there was a stigma about a lot of different things, whether it was actual medical situations, like, let's not talk that so-and-so has cancer. And I'm like, well, that's dumb, because that's, you know, we want to know what we might be genetically predispositioned for, or can I be of support for somebody and help with caregiving in that matter? Not letting somebody feel like they have to go through a particular condition or disease state on their own. And then when it came to mental health stuff, it was like, forget it. Nobody wanted to know you had options to go to therapy or talk to somebody like a clergy person or a behavioral counselor. So was that something that you grew up with as well? Like, were people able to share and have those discussions, whether it was at the dinner table or in church? Like you know, not everybody, right? Not everybody practiced what they preach, unfortunately.
Yes. Wow. Did you just hit a nerve here? Yeah. I absolutely grew up with, yep, we don't talk about that. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was a codependent, and I learned how to do that, you know, so I grew up as a codependent, as well, you know, and all I ever wanted to do was fix people. It's all I ever wanted to do. Let me just fix the situation. And then you're right. Then we don't have to talk about it. If I just fix it, then we don't have to talk about it. But it's funny because my sister, she has always been the stuffer, right? She stuffs it down and we don't talk about those things. So I grew up not talking about it. But then as I started to meet different people in my life, I found myself opening up, and it was like, wow, this is so refreshing to talk. This is so great. I needed to get those things out. So whether that was with a therapist, whether that was with a best friend, whether that was with a family member who understood what I, you know, went through growing up and what I went through in my marriage, now I can talk about those things. And that is a huge relief. I don't want to keep things bottled up. And I would encourage people to go ahead and open up to somebody, even if you have to open up to the cat or the dog to start right. with. Just start opening up. And a journal is a great way to do that. I do a lot of journaling. I have so many journals that are just filled with all kinds of writings. Sometimes I've had to just sit down and write letters to the people in my life that I wanted to have those conversations with and couldn't. So let me get it out onto paper. At least it's landing somewhere. It's getting out of my brain and it's landing onto a piece of paper. Even if they never see that letter, even if I never talk about it with that person, I've gotten it out. So that is huge for me, journaling.
Yeah. I think that's something I've heard about too. Like, just, you know, write it up, tear it up and set fire to it. So like nobody ever comes across it, but it's your own healing process. And there are definitely, you know, I mean, we could go on and on, which I'm so in love with this conversation already, but so much of this is part of that human behavior. Again, what triggers you? What sets somebody off to, okay, so in your case, you were soothing and comforting with food. In other people's cases, they might restrict and do the complete opposite. Like, I don't deserve love. I don't deserve nourishment. I'm going to hold myself for that too. So I might actually put a trigger warning on this episode when it comes out, because these are signs of disordered eating patterns, whether or not they've been officially and, through the proper counseling, diagnosed as such, but these are signs of that, like making sure that people do feel that they have other outlets. So it's just so bizarre how food really spans all of this. Like, everybody's go-to or not go-to is related to food in that way. And so there carries so much of a story. It's very hard to detach, like, no, this is just for nourishment and or enjoyment. It doesn't make me a good person or a bad person. And it cannot provide me with the healing comfort that I need instead of going to therapy, going to church, taking medicine, like there's certain things that you might have to do in order to get to the next step. And food plays a role in that as far as nourishing you or providing you again with enjoyment. So, you know, not denying yourself that you were a bad person so you can never eat an Oreo cookie again. That's not what we're saying at all. But just recognizing, I deserve this. I deserve to be happy. I deserve comfort. I deserve to heal. And I'm going to do that in a way that won't make me have, I guess, the wrong choices that make me feel even worse after the fact, because we don't want that to end up trickling down and causing even more strife or more emotion. So let's talk a little bit as we're coming up on oh my gosh, I can't believe how long we've been chatting already, but as we're coming up towards the end of our conversation together, I do want to find out a little bit more about a few things. Number one, you mentioned that you work at the Stretch Zone, and I do want to talk a little bit about the role that flexibility and balance play in our lives and also in our future selves, because I'm currently staying in my mom's. My mom is an older woman and she lives in a retirement community. So there's a lot of older people here and they're all very active. Like everybody's, you know, out and like riding their bikes. And it's so exciting to see that. But of course, I realize no matter what stage of life you're in, you could have mobility issues. But I often say to people, please don't deny yourself. Like, try not to focus so much on restricting or being so, so focused and obsessed with your food intake and then forget that you still should maintain flexibility, balance, strength, because the future you really depends on that. So can you talk a little bit about that too, the insight that you have from what the services are at your place? Is it just therapeutic? Is it other things? How do you see clients there? And what are some of the guidelines that you have to help us all make sure that we're maintaining our overall physical health as well in that respect?
Yeah, so Stretch Zone is practitioner-assisted stretching. So think of us as the personal trainers of stretching. So, you know, there are proprietary tables that have a strapping system on them that help to isolate and stabilize the muscles we're working on. This way your body doesn't compensate during a stretch. We work with an intensity scale to, you know, allow the client to communicate what they're feeling. This way we don't overstretch anybody. And, you know, stretching is, it's so beneficial for everybody. We stretch clients from ages 14 all the way up to, I think my oldest client might be 85 years old. And everybody comes in with different athletic abilities, different issues. Some people have sciatic pain. Some people are suffering from plantar fasciitis. Some people are suffering from neck pain and, you know, whatever might be going on in their body and in their world. So stretching, the way Stretch Zone does it is, you know, there's a science behind it. It's neuromuscular stretching. We're working with that nervous system, you know, to encourage the body to regain that flexibility and range of motion so that you can go about your daily activities without any pain or discomfort in the body. As I talk, so I do all the intakes, and as I chat with a client, I try to find out, you know, different things about their activity levels and how often they go to the gym. And you know, some people are playing pickleball or golf, and, you know, their hip pain or whatever it might be interrupting some of those activities. And these are the things they love to do. And as we age, we start to lose, naturally start to lose range of motion and flexibility, right, and, you know, mobility. So, you know, it's a really great feeling to have somebody else stretch you, because we can get up in the morning and do a little yoga and do some stretching on our own, but it's a completely different feeling to have somebody else do it for you and take that stretch to the next level. So, there's nothing painful about it. It is absolutely amazing. Gets the blood flowing. I actually felt 2 inches taller when I got done being
I believe
stretched.
That. I believe that.
You feel like you're walking on a cloud. You're a little bit lighter. It feels really, really amazing. So adding that in to a healthy diet, to working out regularly, you know, keeping yourself mobile and healthy throughout your life is just, you know, it's all those things that just contribute to our overall health.
That's amazing. And this is something that you could just walk in or make an appointment for. You don't have to get a referral or
you don't need a referral yet. We don't take we don't diagnose or treat anything. So right. therefore it's, you know, not covered by insurance. So you would just make an appointment for a consultation, and then we would go through that consultation, and then I would find, you know, a program that's affordable for you. It's like a membership, like a gym.
That's amazing. And I think that's the thing. I mean, people will spend money on a variety of different things, but then not necessarily invest on their own physical or mental well-being. So I really encourage, if people have the budget and the means to do so, you know, allow yourself to do things like this, because they can help the current you, the future you. They can provide you with, you know, relief of pain. That could also be causing trauma and discomfort. Sometimes your whole digestive system is messed up because your neck hurts you or you're having stress issues. So this is a great service that you're providing there too. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about the future you and the current you. So what are you getting into these days when it comes to the health coaching business, and where do you see that going in the next handful of years?
I want to coach me, right? So I look at myself and I say, okay, this is who I want to help. I want to help women that are going through or coming out of divorce, you know, help them with their health and wellness overall, and just help them step into their power and help them, you know, be who they need to be to get through the rest of their life and enjoy it. Right. I'm finally learning how to enjoy my life and have mm-hmm. fun. And there were a lot of years where I just didn't have a lot of fun. So I absolutely see myself helping women coming out of divorce or traumatic situations to, you know, gain a hold of their health and wellness and just step into their power and figure out who they are.
Oh my gosh, that is fantastic. This is what in the marketing world is known as niching down and knowing your target audience, because, you know, when we're credentialed or we're trained in certain things, yes, we could apply that globally to the general population. But when you focus on a particular person, and I love that you said, I want to help me, because you know who that specific, you know, like quote unquote avatar is. Like, you can picture this person in your head. They've gone through what I've gone through. And in doing so, Linda, you're also providing people with some sort of self-disclosure too. Like, you're very able to be sympathetic and empathetic. You have compassion knowing that you've been there, and you can play that role that also, I think, when they're working with you, alleviates the stress, and they know that you're automatically supporting them because you've gone through it. So this is something that I just want to share, because the people that listen to this podcast are a variety of people, usually in the health and wellness world. Some of them are students, some of them are already business owners or looking to be business owners, or maybe want to be business owners. And the point is that, yeah, you can be trained and get your degrees and be certified, et cetera, in things, but try to specialize in something, try to have a target population, because that person is waiting for you to show up for them in a way that a generalist just will never be able to do that. So even though other healthcare providers, health and wellness professionals might be able to say, you know, here's my program, here's a checklist of stuff that you shouldn't do, it feels like almost you're getting a concierge service when somebody speaks the exact language that you're talking about. And I'm literally talking about, you know, if you are from a cultural population, go to somebody who speaks your language, go to somebody who understands your cultural traditional ways, that doesn't make you feel like you can't eat rice because that's part of your staple foods. Like, these are all okay things. You know, really, and I think this also is something I enjoy with helping people and promoting them and advocating for pursuing what they enjoy doing, because there's just not enough of us out there, right? There's whatever, 1 million medical doctors, 2 million registered nurses. But when it comes to health and wellness support, dietitians, we only have about 110,000 of us in the States. Health coaching, there might be a little bit more, but I don't know if you're up in the like hundreds of thousands just yet, but there's an opportunity for everybody. People are going to be literally and figuratively speaking your language. So if anybody is interested in pursuing services, like, try to do a little research, see who's out there, look at people's websites, watch their social media pages, and see what resonates you, because I'm not for everyone and Linda's probably not for everyone, but we're for the people that we want to work with. And that's who I hope that are going to find us either organically or through our, you know, promotional output and things that we're doing to hopefully bring clients in. So on that note, Linda, what are some places that people can find you? Are you on social media? I mean, I have some of your social media handles, which I'm happy to put, but why don't you share a little bit about kind of like where you live in the internet world?
I am on Facebook. You can find me just under Linda Claire, which is my middle name, C-L-A-I-R-E. And I do have a social media account for Balance Health Coaching, which is my health coaching, site.
So is there anything that we didn't cover that you would like to share, discuss, or fill us in on anything that we didn't get a chance to go over in our conversation today?
I would love to talk about the body-mind connection as well.
Ooh.
Very nice, introduction to that this year for myself. And, so when, people come into the understanding that I have of it now and people are coming into stretch, they're like, oh, my back hurts. Okay, well, it's really like, I would love to take that deep dive into why your back hurts, because it's that body mind connection, right? Like what we're experiencing pain in different parts of the body because of traumas that, we've been through in our lifetime. And the body keeps the score, right? There's a book out there, the body keeps the score.
Indeed.
And so I love diving into that. And I'm just learning so much about that this year. I had my own experience with Rolfing, which brought up a lot for me, and was a huge healing experience. So I would love to take a deep dive into a conversation about that as well.
Oh my goodness. That sounds exciting. I often say to all of my guests that we need a part two so I do these wellness retreats at the end of the beginning of December. This year, I'm not going to be able to do it, but it's really a whole like weekend thing that people just come in and talk and share. And it's a little snippet of everything. So people can either do presentations or they can walk us through it's a virtual retreat. So they can walk us through, 30 minutes exercising or whatever it is that they want to talk about. But I love discussing stuff like this. And I think, the things that we talked about, we are health and wellness professionals, but we're also human. And we also deal with our own issues and situations and past experiences and trauma recovery. And like you said, when you first started talking, I still relapse. I still have issues. I'm still not 100% fixed or cured, but I might never be. And that's okay, because that's what makes me a human being. And that also what's giving us the ability to be able to work with our clients on a more personal and human level, because we're not perfect. We're not knowing everything there is to know, but we do know a little bit more than some people who are coming to us might. And we are here to help support you in your own wellness journey. So hopefully we can get you to that next step. My dear, it has been a pleasure chatting with you. Before we officially wrap up, I have to ask you my two favorite last questions, related, not related. So I always ask, what is on your plate today? And I'm talking figuratively and literally. So what is the next thing that you're going to do when we wrap up here? And then what is the next meal that you're preparing or having for yourself?
Sure. So on my plate today would be my very good friend came down from New York City. We're actually doing a photo shoot tomorrow for some of our Facebook things. She's also a health coach in New York City. So she is down. So we are actually headed to dinner tonight at one of my favorite restaurants. So we will be dining out this evening. So I'm not really sure what's literally on my plate until I see the menu. And then I did make my famous and favorite turkey chili that I indulged in last night and we'll probably have for lunch tomorrow.
On your literal plate and then your figurative plate.
So with Stretch Zone, we are currently campaigning to local businesses if they would like to do an employee appreciation night, and you can actually book a private party. And private parties at Stretch Zone are really for everybody and anybody. We're promoting it to local businesses to do employee appreciation night with the holidays coming up. A lot of companies like to do things for their employees.
Yeah.
So we're promoting that, but anybody can host a stretch party. So get in touch with us at the studio and we know we can do that. And then for my own, I am working with a business coach to really help me promote and launch my new look and my new program.
Amazing.
So I'm working with a business coach on that.
And I wish you the absolute best. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you and spending the better part of an hour here with you.
Yeah.
And I'm also so grateful of just, you know, your transparency and your vulnerability, because I do think, and I've always said this, there's strength in that, whether it's in your own healing or the things that could resonate for other people too, that, you know, we're not alone. We're all part of this giant big blue marble, and hopefully we're just here to live and love and learn. So thank you so much for spending time with me and sharing your story.
Thank you. This was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.